From between the hedges at Sanford Stadium to the practice fields, from Stegman Coliseum and wherever else the Bulldogs are playing, it's time to talk Georgia sports.
Touchdown, touchdown, don't win it!
From the Athens Banner Herald, here are your hosts, Mark Weiser and Ryan Dennis.
Hey, welcome in. It's the Bulldogs Extra Podcast on a sort of rainy Thursday late morning. Another recruiting cycle is about over. I guess there could still
be... We still got transfer portal cycles and all that.
Well, that is a different kind of recruiting. I'm talking about the old high school recruiting.
Yep.
Georgia added a handful of guys yesterday to their class, but mostly this class now in the rearview mirror. Kirby Smart will be getting paid in a new deal in the weeks or months ahead. And the men's basketball team had a little rough night on Wednesday at Stegman Coliseum. I feel like we've been saying they've had a lot of rough nights this season.
Yeah.
As Arkansas came to town and administered a whopping. We'll talk about the recruiting class and maybe some 2023 recruits to watch with McLean Baxley, who covers recruiting for the Athens Banner Herald. Ryan, I know you were busy yesterday. You actually went to a local high school for their signing ceremony. But I know you're probably a little bit more jacked up about these Winter Olympics. And, you know, kind of I want to ask you your assessment of the U.S. chances in curling.
Yeah, so they got the Pete guy back who's going to be the flag bearer this year. I have full faith in him.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, trust me on this. So the curling guy is a flag bearer, but I do like the Winter Olympics. I've always had this discussion, and everybody disagrees with me, but the Winter Olympics to me are better than the Summer Olympics. I don't know what it is about it, but I enjoy seeing some of the unique things that we don't get to see here in Georgia too often.
Ryan, if you didn't know, is a native of Saskatchewan and loves everything cold.
Don't lie to the people. I'm from right here in Georgia and love the warmth. Hey, so, I can't get enough of it.
Speaking of cold, I saw Dan Wetzel column, the fine Yahoo columnist.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote about, I guess the U.S. men's team played a qualifier of some sort against Honduras yesterday and played it in Minnesota.
In curling?
St. Paul. We're talking soccer.
Oh.
See, and it was 2 degrees. So basically, they scheduled this matchup to give them kind of a climate advantage.
Didn't they do that a couple weeks ago in Columbia?
I don't know.
Or not Columbia, but Columbus, Ohio. They played a match there against like Costa Rica or something. And I thought that same thing. And they won 1-0 or something. But I don't know. It seems like I don't care. Play it in Miami. You know, are we talking about the national championship game, or are we talking about the soccer here now?
Can Georgia basketball, the men's team, can they find a local blacktop, outdoor park to maybe play Auburn on Saturday, maybe give them an advantage?
You know, there's outside of Cresswell Hall, there's some courts there. They can hop over there. Probably, just have some fans stand around the court. It'll probably be about as many as will be in. No, it'll be Auburn, so I guess.
The game's sold out, Ryan.
Yes. Is it going to be like the old Kentucky days where –
Yes,
I believe so. It's going to be all orange across the top of this.
I believe so. We'll find out what it looks like. But this will be the first sellout of the year, and I expect it will be thousands of Auburn fans.
I can say, it's not going to be a sellout like in the early Tom Crean days where people were excited about this program. You know, Georgia fans would show up with excitement. Not going to be the same.
All right. I don't know. Well, we'll get to basketball a little bit later. We want to keep the focus on football, except to mention that U.S. women's hockey team beat Phelan 5-2, so go USA.
There you go.
One more thing before we get to football and recruiting. Well, this is kind of football. Ryan, your thoughts on the Washington Commanders, the new NFL name for the Washington franchise, which I was fine with the football team, Washington football team. It's the same colors, the burgundy and gold, but you know what? I don't even, the name is fine.
I mean, this is more of a question for you being your kind of hometown.
It's fine. I'm over it. It doesn't matter.
I mean, it does sound XFL-ish or something, so I don't know. I agree. I think a lot of people out there like the Washington football team. You know, you didn't have to overthink it. Just keep it simple.
All right. As we mentioned, we thought this class kind of might be over, but a 5-star defensive end, LT Overton, announced Thursday morning that he's reclassifying to the 2022 class. He's a kid from the state, and Georgia's in his top five. And so maybe we'll get McLean to kind of talk about that. So I think this kid would have been – he's out of Milton High School, and you know, one of the best, if not the best, prospects in the state expected for next year. Ryan, this Georgia recruiting class currently ranked number three. Another top three class, I think it's something like five of the last six. There was a fourth, maybe, was it last year or the year before? I don't remember. What jumps out at you, Ryan? I know last night you were in your basement, as usual, breaking down the tapes. You got any comments on that?
On me in my basement or on the recruiting class?
Both. They're part and parcel.
No, I mean, I don't think there was any big surprises on Wednesday from the thing. You know, you pull in the running back out of Texas. That might have been the biggest surprise. And I think
Andrew Paul.
Mm-hmm. A speedster, they tell me.
5'11", 220 out of Parish Episcopal in Dallas.
And it kind of just adds that lightning to the thunder, I think. You know, a couple big kids coming in at running back, or, you know, when I say big, I mean, like, if you see pictures of them online, they look like they're about 28 years old already. And you know, I expect them to kind of be the Zamir White type, be, you know, the big up the middle, can create some create some extra yardage type deals.
The other running back that they signed earlier, Branson Robinson, who's
that dude is put together,
5'10", 220 out of Canton, Mississippi. He's more of a highly rated kid. Andrew Paul was a guy that kind of came on Georgia's attention.
Well, you know, when I think about this, and not that Todd Gurley was underrated by any means, but, you know, Keith Marshall was the better prospect, they said. And I know he got hampered by a little bit of injuries, but, I mean, I don't think it would have mattered because Todd Gurley was simply a beast. So, you know, you never know about that rating once they get on campus.
Todd Gurley did, I believe, yesterday kind of sent out congratulations to Mr. Paul, and I'm sure Andrew was thrilled because he responded about it. And I'm sure Andrew was, you know, was he probably just starting high school when Todd was like at the peak of his NFL stardom?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
exactly.
That's
that kid was like, he was 8 years old when Todd Gurley was starring for the Bulldogs.
Yeah, I don't know how
8, 9, 10 somewhere in there.
I don't know how much he was watching Georgia football from Texas then, but maybe he was. So there were five guys that were officially added to the class yesterday. Dylan Bell, a wide receiver from Houston, Texas, was already a commitment, as was Darius Smith, the edge rusher out of Appling County.
Just had to put pen to paper.
New additions, Kristen Miller, defensive lineman from Cedar Grove, who was, I guess, their biggest get yesterday, and then an inside linebacker out of Fitzgerald, E.J. Lightsey.
How about the Texas, the pipeline there to Texas? And wouldn't you think that maybe a Matthew Stafford would send some love to Andrew Paul? I know he's focusing on the Super Bowl, but both from Dallas there should have been like, hey, welcome to the Bulldogs brotherhood, brother.
Might have a good point there. Bear Alexander from Texas, Dylan Bell from Texas, Julian Humphrey, cornerback from Texas, and
then Lewis Seen, you know, was from Texas.
Well, he was and he wasn't. I mean, I think he spent a year in high school in Texas. His ties are really in Boston. That's where he was earlier.
Well, see, I mean, that's even more out of the realm of.
Speaking of Boston,
thinking, yeah,
I don't think it's actually Boston, but somewhere in Massachusetts. On the way to the, I was at the parade. Was I going? I can't remember, but I left the press box during the celebration a few weeks ago, and as I'm walking, I see one Artie Lynch coming in. I think he was doing some TV work for one of the Atlanta stations, but greeted him. It was good to see him, and maybe need to get him back on the podcast again, give us his impressions of Brock Bowers. You know, it's fair to say that if you had to rank the best tight ends in Georgia history, Brock Bowers 1, Arthur Lynch 2.
Let's see. You got the Randy McMichaels of the world.
I'm joking. But Arthur was
Arthur good. Was good.
Arthur, good interview, too.
Hey, how was Arthur feeling that day? Because I don't know if you follow one.
No. You know what? I think I did mention something to him because I think somebody had. Did Murray put that out?
Aaron Murray posted him and Artie, Ty Fricks, and
I think I did joke with him.
The
about
The big
that.
Stetson went out for a big night the night before the parade, so I think they were all hurting a little bit the following morning.
Hey, speaking of Matthew Stafford, as you just mentioned, I had a chance to speak to many of his friends and former teammates for a story that posted yesterday. Check it out at onlineathens.com. Sean Chappis, who is in the Georgia Bulldog Club, a fundraiser there, was at the game at the Super Bowl in the suite with Kelly Stafford.
Not the Super Bowl, but at the...
I'm sorry, yeah, at the yeah. NFC Championship right. game, as was David Koonin, who was a student assistant for Claude Felton at the time when Stafford was here, and now is works for CAA as an agent more in the media world with you know, people like Adam Schefter, I believe Maria Taylor as well. And speaking of Maria Taylor, she put out something on social media that she was in L.A. yesterday or sometime in the last day or two, doing a story for NBC on the Staffords, Matthew and Kelly, to run on Super Bowl Sunday, as I'm sure she'll get into Kelly's, you know, battling that yes. brain tumor. And yes. Kelly, which I didn't even know until I wrote this story, she has a podcast, Ryan. Did you know that? Is that on your
yeah,
rotation?
It's not, but a clip of that popped up on my Instagram yesterday, you know, and, it was very touching about her jumping in Matthew's arms after the
It wasn't really his arms. She wrapped herself around him.
I didn't want to get too graphic here on the podcast.
Yeah, she even mentioned that. But one thing I'll say is that I think you might have to give that podcast, her podcast, a PG-13 rating.
Yeah, she dropped some F-bombs.
She dropped some F-bombs, yeah, she does, yeah. And which, you know, I think it's a good lesson for us. Let's start spicing this thing up a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, I mean, there is a thing I press when I edit this clean, PG-13. Hey, one thing about Kelly Stafford, back when she was Kelly, I can't, you know, whatever.
Hall? Kelly Hall?
Yeah, Kelly Hall, thank you. You know, she used to go to Ramsey and ball a good bit because I had some buddies that would go in there and they would, you know, happen to be on her team a good bit. And,
well, Sean told me his wife, who's good friends with Kelly also, was a walk-on women's basketball player and is good friends with Kelly. So
yeah,
maybe
I bet. I can't remember the high school.
They went to the Wesleyan school.
Wesleyan, yeah, yeah, yeah. Apparently she was really good at Wesleyan and yeah. would go in there and ball. You know, obviously yeah. she became a cheerleader and, mm-hmm. and all that stuff. But she was, I heard a good, from reports from my buddy, she was a good little basketball player.
Had a chance to talk to Muhammad Massaqua and Joe Cox for that story on Stafford and took the time to, while I was speaking to them, to talk a little bit of Mike Bobo and Brian McClendon and threw that in another story that I have yesterday, which...
You know, it didn't cross my mind that McClendon and Massaqua would have crossed paths. I guess that's how long ago
Yeah, he called McClendon kind of his big brother. Yeah. I think they overlapped a little bit.
And then he became his coach, kind of, didn't he?
He was a graduate assistant
okay. yeah,
at the time. All right, well, that's a good transition we can make then to Mike Bobo joining the staff as an offensive analyst, although I asked Kirby about it yesterday and I kind of wanted to get, you know, the rundown of what his job duties might entail, and he kind of said that's to be determined. You know, I imagine, I'll put it this way, that he might have a bigger portfolio as an off-field guy than a typical analyst, given his background as a head coach and offensive coordinator in the SEC. But, of course, you know, with his son Drew now on staff.
On the team.
No, he's on staff. He's a player coach. No, he's a freshman offensive lineman. You know, it's great for him to be able to experience that while also, you know, I mean, here's the thing, and it's the same thing for sports writers to a certain extent. You miss a lot of things from your kid's life because you're on the road, you're covering games. These guys are coaching games, they're recruiting, they're in the office for a long time. They get paid well, so they, you know, really, that's the kind of, you know, pluses and minuses of it. But anyway, so he's back, and, you know, Todd Monken had been linked to an NFL job. I mean, if he ended up taking a job, I mean, would they move Bobo into an offensive coordinator job? I don't know if that's the case, but certainly you have someone on staff, you know, that you respect, although obviously didn't work out well at South Carolina or Auburn for him.
Well, you know, obviously Georgia fans know that he's a pretty good mind when it comes to offense. And, you know, I always wonder about this. What does Todd Monken, you know, are they ever suspicious, but what's the word I'm looking for? Are they ever hesitant about somebody like them coming in? And I thought about this with Scott Cochran coming in.
Sinclair?
Get back coach. Yeah. Is he a little bit like...
Excuse me, that is a national championship strength coach. You're calling him a get-back coach?
You know, everybody knows what I'm talking about, too.
Well, I think it was more natural when Will Muschamp came in last year. You wondered, you know, with Dan Lanning, does he feel like he's encroaching on his territory?
Exactly.
But look, Dan Lanning's now the head coach at Oregon, and
right.
he said all the right things. I mean, you don't know behind the scenes how he felt about it, but you know, when Muschamp moved into an on-field role and became a position coach per se, you know, a little unclear. I mean, he definitely had a lot of influence coaching the DBs, but it seemed to work out pretty well. As
well, now you think like, what does Shue think of? What does Shuman think of this co-defense coordinator thing? You think he's like,
why don't you give him a call right now?
I know. I'm sure that Kirby.
Well, you know, it'll be interesting because usually we get the coordinators in like the first week of preseason
camp.
Who
are we getting?
I imagine we're gonna have to get them both.
Yeah, we should. But do they just throw Muschamp out there? Because
I mean, I don't think that's gonna happen. Because if you do, then you're basically saying this is our guy, really, number one. So I don't think so. We got to bring on McClain to talk some recruiting. But before we do. Well, we didn't really mention BMAC. Let me say this about Brian McClendon coming back to the staff. Everybody was thrilled in terms of Georgia fans. And interesting, I don't remember
a video like that. Yeah.
Like a welcome back video.
That was cool. Yeah.
You know, looking for like the welcome back Cotter theme song or something yeah. like that.
Welcome, BMAC. You like that?
Yeah. Look, here's a guy that's recruited many of the great RBU guys that you talk about for Georgia running backs. And has led Georgia to a Gator Bowl win over James Franklin and Penn State as an interim head coach. Worked with Will Muschamp at South Carolina. Now, I think that part...
helped him come back?
Well, yeah. I mean, Will Muschamp could, you know, very much vouch for him. Now, Kirby, as he mentioned yesterday, you know, he coached McClendon as a special teamer in 2005 when he was on staff. But otherwise, I mean, he chose not to retain him, or McClendon chose to leave when Kirby was putting together his next staff. You know, lo and behold, what are we, 7 years later or something like that? He needed a wide receivers coach, and he went to Miami where McClendon was there for a cup of coffee for 3 weeks or something, and brings him back here. They're facing Oregon in the opener, so...
Well, I felt like he, you know, went with Cristobal, right, to Miami and felt like...
Yeah, he did.
And that's what I'm saying, like, he... Maybe begrudgingly, whatever the word I'm looking for, he went to Miami thinking, you know, I'm going to stick with him. And then it was like when he got that opportunity, hey, I'm going to take what's best for me and my family, and this seems like home.
All right, last thing I want to mention before we get to recruiting is Nick Saban had some interesting comments. I mean, expected really about Jermaine Burton yesterday. He said this, he had a fairly productive year at Georgia. We're a little bit more wide open. Throw the ball more with a good quarterback.
Ooh, yikes.
Now, you know, Jermaine will have more opportunities. He'll have more targets, I would suspect, there. And they do throw the ball more at Alabama. You just don't really – that's kind of the thing that you don't expect the coach to necessarily say out loud.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting if Kirby wants to comment on that, you know, if it comes up again. But
you know another video I saw yesterday from South Carolina?
Retweeted Shane it. Shane Beamer talking about Lavoisier Carroll?
Yeah. Well, I guess wasn't Lavoisier Carroll in that video?
Yeah. There was one about that, too. But Beamer also said that Georgia was probably going to move him back to running back and that his girlfriend goes to South Carolina, so that didn't hurt.
There you go.
All right. Let's talk more recruiting with McClain Baxley. All right, Georgia with a number 3 ranked recruiting class according to the 247 Sports Composite. And to talk about the Bulldogs recruiting class for 2022 and maybe a little bit about what some of the players to watch for the next cycle, bring on McClain Baxley, who covers UGA recruiting and other sports things for the Athens Banner-Herald as Ryan hits a microphone.
My bad.
McClain, what's going on? How are you?
Doing well. Finally recovered after yesterday's exciting signing day.
I'd have a hangover, I think, if I were you.
Yeah, February signing day is not what it used to be, but there was certainly some players locally and nationally that made their decisions. McClain, you wrote about 5 players that you expect to make the most impact on the field in 2022 for Georgia. Why don't you tell us about a couple of those or you know, how you see that in terms of positions where a guy might be able to slide in and help the Bulldogs?
Yeah, this article went live Thursday morning on onlineathletes.com. But, yeah, I mean, there's, you know, with 19 early enrollees, you know, these are guys that, you know, enrolled in January, so they're already – around the team, they're already doing workouts. They're already, you know, Kirby Smart talked about it yesterday. They're already, you know, going through nutrition plans. They're already going to team meetings and stuff. So they're already getting that advantage of being around, you know, the national championship winning program. So I listed five guys, and a couple of them I think really have a chance. One of those is Malachi Starks. Obviously, our listeners are very they know who he is. You know, he's a Jefferson star. You know, played everywhere and anywhere. He's huge. He's fast. He's, you know, versatile, smart. He knows football really well, and he's a guy that, you know, he played, you know, like I said, everywhere in Jefferson, but he's probably going to play mostly safety with the Bulldogs. He's a guy that, you know, should, you know, I think any team in the country would just, you know, make a spot for him. You know, to kind of move up, and though he will be a freshman, you know, he's a guy that I expect to see the field this season. And then Michael Williams, you know, he was named the Defensive Player of the Year nationally. He was performer of the week at the All-American Bowl there in San Antonio to start off the year. And, you know, that's going against the best guys in the country. That's not just going against, you know, he's from Columbus, you know, so he's you know, at Hardaway High School. So he's played against some of the best players in the state. But to go out there at the All-American Bowl and just show out against, you know, the top recruits in the country, senior recruits, and still perform super well is impressive. And, you know, with guys like Jordan Davis and Traylon Walker and Devontae Wyatt leaving, he'll be able to fill in and, you know, compete for a spot. So those are two guys that I see, you know, could come in and have an instant impact.
Everybody's seen Branson Robinson, running back, and Mark and I talked about him a little bit earlier. I mean, he's put together. He looks like he's about 32 and, you know, 18-year-old body there. But they went after Andrew Paul out of Dallas, Texas yesterday, you know, added another running back to this class, which seems to be kind of the MO of Kirby, and even going back to Mark Richt days, add a few good running backs to every class. What do you see out of Andrew Paul? I know he's a little bit more of a speedster guy maybe, but why would Georgia bring him in to go with Branson?
I think it kind of goes back to Jordan James. I'd find not to sign with Georgia because, like you said, they want to have two running backs in every class. And so you already had Robinson on board from December. But, yeah, he's a faster guy. He's a guy that, you know, put up huge numbers this season and through his career there at a small private school in Texas. But he's a guy that, you know, they were impressed with. And, you know, Del McGee, I think, is, you know, nationally one of the top recruiters for any position, but especially running back position. And, you know, he you know, kind of keyed in on Paul a few weeks ago. I mean, it was a really wild recruitment. I mean, they offered him, you know, January 23rd or 25th, and then he signed with them on February 2nd. So, you know, a week and a half, 2 weeks of recruitment. And he, you know, chose Georgia over Clemson, who had been recruiting him harder, and even Michigan, who he had on the table. But, yeah, Paul's a guy that's definitely going to be, you know, more of a you know, work in progress, as Smart alluded to yesterday. He's you know, got good size, good work ethic, but you know, he's you know, a younger guy that doesn't look 32 like you said with Robinson, who's just, you know, 220 pounds of muscle, it seems like. So you know, definitely good for Georgia to get that second running back, especially, you know, because you're losing James Cook and Zamir White to the draft. But you know, I don't think Georgia will ever have a problem with having too few running backs.
You mentioned losing some guys, you know, at a certain position. The defensive line is one of those spots with Jordan Davis, Devontae Wyatt. But, you know, if you look at this signing class, the Bulldogs filled those gaps, you know, with quantity and quality. And then yesterday added Kristen Miller out of Cedar Grove High, who has not the only one from Cedar Grove in this class. I know Kirby talked about kind of establishing relationships and being consistent in a recruiting approach. What do you know about Kristen Miller in terms of, you know, either, you know, kind of how Georgia won the battle to get him and what he might bring to the table?
Well, how they won the battle was, like you said, you know, what Kirby said and, you know, Christian said in different interviews, about how they were consistent. They were, you know, they locked in on him early on in their recruiting process, you know, freshman, sophomore year, and didn't waver. You know, they had guys go to the game. They had guys, you know, they had in-home visits at the right times. They had him on campus, and when he was on campus, they knew that he was a guy that valued relationships, valued, you know, connections, and so they did their best to try and, you know, formulate those relationships, not just with Kirby Smart and you know, the top, but, you know, all the way down, you know, Chase Scott, you know, defensive line coach and, you know, other recruiting coaches. So, really big relationship. He's a guy that is huge. And, you know, I'm pulling up here and, you know, he's just a guy that, you know, 6'4", 294, big guy, quick. He wasn't the only reason Cedar Grove won a state championship this year. They had a really good team, but he was definitely a huge player, especially on defense. And he played some offense as well, but he's a guy that has a lot of energy, a lot of, you see these videos and stuff from the All-American Bowl where he was injured. He didn't play in it, but he was still there, still, you know, cutting up with, you know, recruits, both, you know, Georgia signees and other schools guys. And he's a guy that, you know, just you want in your locker room, and whether he's, you know, plays this year or plays, you know, 2 years from now, I mean, I think he's a guy that is definitely going to benefit Georgia in the long run and benefit Georgia and their coaches to show that, you know, from freshman, sophomore year of high school all the way through, you know, 2 or 3 years from now when he's, you know, looking at the draft, he's a guy that has been with Georgia that whole way. And while there were, you know, Ohio State came in and Florida A&M and Oregon, you know, pushed hard for him. I think it shows, you know, Kirby Smart's ability to keep those top guys in the state.
Obviously, Georgia losing a lot on defense. You know, Jordan Davis and linebacking core of Channing Tindall and Nakobe Dean and Quay Walker. And I noticed on your list of five guys that could play, four were defensive players. You know, you got a five-star in Jaheim Singletary and Darius Smith, who signed yesterday, and of course Malachi probably slide in at some safety reps, possibly. You know, how important was this class for Kirby and I guess the new defensive coordinators to really fill some holes that might be departing?
I think we talk about it a little bit with Alabama's been talking about, they don't, you know, rebuild, they reload. Yeah, you know, this 2021 Georgia defense could be up there as one of the top in the country, in the top in, you know, college football history, and you lose half of them, and they still come in with, you know, four or five stars, you know, a bunch of guys that were proven, you know, in high school and proven state champions, and you know, have that work ethic that Georgia once has, that you know, ability to perform. And so I think the fact that you know, all five of their five stars are defensive players is just showing what you know, Kirby and you know, this the staff is really built there in Athens as, you know, one of the top defensive places to be. Obviously, we know the SEC is a defensive conference, and they, you know, you think of Alabama, you think of, you know, Florida a couple of years. I mean, they have, you know, it's a very defensive heavy conference, and some of the best players on both sides of the wall. But what Georgia's been able to do the past couple of years, and especially showing it last year, of, hey, if you're here for 3 or 4 years and you're here, you know, you're gonna, you know, everybody's stock rose, whether they ended up winning that championship or not, everybody's stock rose throughout the season. So it is a strong example of, you know, you come in, we're gonna mold you, we're gonna develop you into being, you know, a first, second round guy in the NFL.
All right, McLean, we'll get you out of here on this. You know, a lot of talk this week from Nick Saban to Jimbo Fisher to Kirby Smart talking about name, image, and likeness. And for a guy that talks to these recruits, you know, from, you know, in different avenues, different venues, whether it's a summer camp or after they take some recruiting visits, you know, or even after games, how much do you think name, image, and likeness, the potential for these guys to make money when they get to these college campuses is a factor when they're making their decisions? You know, does it come up in conversations when you're asking them about schools that they are considering, and you know, how has it changed the game?
It's definitely changed the game. I think it's something that has to be considered for teams and for players, recruits. But honestly, most of the guys that I talk to, whether guys that are going to the Georgias and the Alabamas and the Clemsons, or guys that are going to the Georgia Southerns or the, you know, whatever, G5 and smaller schools, I don't think it's that big of a factor. I think the same thing still, I think the biggest thing is development, is the thing, you know, of why these kids want to go where they go. They talk about, you know, the coaches that are there, they talk about past guys that are now playing in the NFL, how they, you know, developed over 3 or 4 years. I think that's still the biggest factor. You know, Kirby talked about yesterday how, you know, these guys don't really care if they're playing for championships or if they're, you know, getting certain stuff, but I think that the biggest factor is still the development. You know, if I can go, if I'm a really good guy, I can go to Alabama and you know, get coached by some of the best coaches, or if I can go to Georgia and show, you know, he talked about yesterday with Jordan Davis, a guy that was under-recruited, you know, came in and now he's, you know, probably a first or second round guy, and he has a national championship and several, you know, all SEC and, you know, a couple All-American honors and stuff. So I think that's the biggest thing still. And NIL definitely helps, and I think that's, it puts these bigger schools at an even bigger advantage, because obviously you can see, like you talk about, you know, Bryce Young at Alabama, you know, had that $1 million deal. Because he's at Alabama, he's the quarterback of Alabama. Now he has a Heisman, so he's going to get even more. You know, I expect, you know, a ton of commercials. I expect, you know, different merchandising and stuff. At USC, Caleb Williams, the quarterback who transferred from Oklahoma, who hasn't really even been proven, they're already selling, you know, signed memorabilia at USC. So he hasn't even played a game for the Trojans yet. So there's definitely money at those bigger schools. I mean, it creates a bigger disadvantage for the smaller schools, not even the G5s, but, you know, the, you know, schools that are in Power 5 conferences but don't have that history, don't have that budget as these, you know, big Georgias and USCs and Alabamas and Ohio States of the country. So I think it's something that's definitely considered, but being in the, you know, one of the top factors, I think that's, I don't think it's one of the top factors for a lot of these guys.
All right, I'm going to slide in one more question quickly, because I mentioned I kind of teased for 2023, and I know you wrote about Arch Manning and then quarterbacks that Georgia might, you know, sign in the next cycle. And people can check out your stories on those on onlineathens.com. But give me a name for the 2023 class in terms of a guy, a target that Georgia is probably going after that you're going to be watching in the next few months to see kind of how that thing shapes up.
Well, not to totally plug my article, but I'm going to plug my article. I think it's a quarterback. You know, you're looking at it right now. They're going to, you know, Stetson Bennett return. You know, you still got, you know, Brock Vandergriff. You've got Carson Beck currently. And then now you add Gunnar Stockton. But I think quarterback is a position where each year you're going to get at least one quarterback in that signing class. And Arch Manning is the prime guy. I don't know if he'll end up being here or not, but there's still other candidates that fill that out and have you know, the ability to come in and you know, do well, whether that's, you know, Marcel Reed from Nashville, whether that's a Dylan Lonergan at a Brookwood High School here in Georgia. I mean, there's several guys that I think, you know, Georgia's keying in on, and I think, you know, quarterback position where, you know, that's made early for the most part. And I think the fact that they haven't gotten a quarterback this late, I mean, think about it. I mean, Gunnar, he committed about this time a year ago. You know, a lot of these guys commit early on. So we'll see. You know, I expect a quarterback to commit, whether it's Arch Manning, whether it's Dylan Lonergan, maybe it's some guy we've never even heard of, a Malachi Singleton kind of flips or something. But I think the quarterback position is something that we're going to watch in the next month or two, and I think by May, Georgia will have a quarterback in its class.
All right, McClain, appreciate you joining us, and maybe get a little bit of rest after all the recruiting stories you've cranked out in the last week.
There's no rest in recruiting, and there's no rest for McClain back, so that's my promise for the readers.
All right, thanks, McClain. We'll talk to you later. All right, we thank McClain Baxley for joining us to talk about Georgia recruiting, and you can find his fine work as well as Ryan Dennis's and even my stuff at onlineathens.com. Why don't you get a subscription? I believe we have a special for $1 for 6 months. Is that still around?
I think that's still happening.
If you're a new subscriber, it's worth it. Check it out.
If that's not still going on, there's a deal out there for you.
There you go.
Yep.
There, Ryan Dennis works in the sales department. All right, we got two more things to talk about on this fine podcast, unless something else pops into our heads, which always happens. Ryan, do you want to talk about the Georgia basketball team first? Or
yeah,
the latest nominees for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Let's start with basketball, get that out of the way, because who'd they beat? Oh, Alabama last week.
That was last Tuesday. And then, we already talked about that.
And then, I know. And then it's back to normal, right? You lose at Vanderbilt. You lose bad to Arkansas.
Yeah.
And, things are still spiraling out of control.
So Georgia was down by three in the waning minutes of the first half. And Arkansas drills a three-pointer. Seems like Georgia always, not always, but often this season has given up a big shot at the end of a half, either at the end of the game against Texas A&M,
yep,
or you know, yesterday at the end of the first half. So it's a six-point lead at half. And Arkansas outscored them by 20 points in the second half and won by 27, was it? Something like that. It was a lot.
Well, I mean, it's not even the second half, right? I mean, you know, the Mark Fox days, everybody complained that it was low scoring.
I think it was 52-46.
It was low scoring and boring, but, you know, when a team scores 99 points, 53 in the first half or whatever.
53? Was it 53-47?
I think
maybe
so,
it was.
Yeah. Okay. Because I flipped it off and then I turned it back. Guess what movie was on last night?
No idea.
Groundhog Day. And so, anyway, watch that. But I was like, oh, let me flip over and see what the Georgia game's looking like. And they had been outscored by about 16 to start the half.
Yeah, the first half, they had, you know, like three or four turnovers that turned into runouts where, like, you know, they're just going down and jamming it and, you know, laying it up and that kind of thing. I mean, it was – that's an impressive athletic Arkansas team.
You know, I was taught at a young age that, you know, at least the point guard, when there's a shot goes up, goes back, you know, gets back down to court to be at least a barrier on defense.
These were turnovers.
Of course they were. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Which I think Georgia had like 16 in the first half. Does that sound right?
No, I don't think it was that many. It was pretty evenly distributed, but it was 19 total.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, not a pretty showing, but you know, by the point guards and the team in general. All right, so number one Auburn comes to town. As we mentioned, the game's a sellout. Probably be thousands of Auburn fans there, but look, they already beat Alabama, so I know, Ryan, what do you think the points, but I think Arkansas was favored by,
like a 7.5.
No, it was more than that, I think. I think it was like 11 or something. Jeez. I don't know exactly.
Well, they
covered. I think Auburn would be favored by 16. What do you think?
Well, what was it down there? It was like 16.5, wasn't it?
Yeah, but now Auburn's even better, and Georgia's had some
rough
sledding.
For
I don't
Georgia.
Know. But you're coming off a 27-point loss or whatever. Jeez, it was.
Whatever. I think Auburn can pick their total.
Yeah, look, we had a chance to talk to a couple of Georgia players after the game, and, you know, Kario Aquendo, I guess I should say, talked about how the team just kind of lacked energy in the second half and you know.
That's such a lame excuse.
Hey, I don't see you out there logging 35 minutes or whatever.
That sounds like a line from Airplane. I don't see you logging Walton and Lanier's ass up and down the court for...
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, lack of energy. How do you have a lack of energy?
I mean,
that's just a bad excuse.
The one thing I've heard for the last couple of years from Tom Crean in postgame is that he always says that, oh, when the offense isn't going well, it affects their defense and that kind of thing. But, I mean, you know, if that's an issue, you gotta resolve that.
Yeah, well, it's been well, their defense has always sucked, and this year their offense is pretty bad too. So it's all around it's a crapshoot.
Uh oh, looks like I see a column coming soon.
Yeah, well.
Hey, you know, Jabri Abdul-Rahim had a nice little stretch in the first half where he buried a couple of threes, I believe it was, and you know, looked like the kind of top 40 player he came to be out of high school. But you know, kind of that was it. It was like a flash, and didn't really see much of that. I don't know. I mean, I think this is obviously. By the way, we haven't even mentioned, but Katie Johnson's coming back to town on Saturday, and it'll be interesting. I don't think he's going to get. You know, razzed or anything, because it'll be maybe as many Auburn fans as Georgia fans or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, you see why a guy makes that decision, right? Or Walker Kessler, too. Or, you know, you get to go play for the number one team in the country, or I guess they help form the number one team in the country. So, yeah, can't blame them.
All right. So, were you putting Katie Johnson in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? All right, here's the list. You ready?
Yeah.
Now, Kirby Smart brought up widespread panic that the concert they had out in the streets.
I thought you meant like he started talking about Rock and Roll Hall of Fame yesterday.
Well, no, I'm just mentioning them because, you know, Georgia fans were celebrating and out in the streets like it was a widespread panic concert. That's what Kirby said. But I don't think they're Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees or anything. But here are the nominees. They're not on the list. Very simple, Ryan. Give me a should they go in or should they not. You ready?
Let's do it.
Carly Simon.
Oh, jeez. That's Paul's daughter, right? Is that right?
Are you kidding me?
I say no.
I'm going to say no also. We're not going to break it down for much. That's a no. Eminem.
Yeah. Very influential in, you know, rap. He should be in.
I'm going to say yes also for the same reason. Influential in the rap game and also going to be on the Pepsi halftime show on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
Is it not this Sunday? The Sunday after?
Correct.
Dolly Parton.
Yeah. Definitely.
I'm going to say yes. No, I don't really consider Eminem and Dolly Parton to be rock and roll guys or girls, you know?
No, of course. It's a music hall of fame.
Yeah, exactly.
I hope Dolly joins Eminem on stage at the halftime show.
Duran?
No. Personal preference. Never liked him.
You're wrong. Little Rio, Hungry Like the Wolf.
Yeah.
And they are closer to rock and roll, even though they're kind of on the new wave type of thing.
Yeah, that's not rock.
Big 80s band?
Yeah, I don't know.
Can you get some Duran Duran bumper music for the show?
Yeah, probably could. Not tell
them. All right, Beck. Carson Beck.
Yeah. I will say no to Beck. I don't think he was that big of an influence on the music industry, even though he had some, you know, unique sounds.
I'm going to say no also and say come back in 5 years maybe.
Yeah.
Lionel Richie.
Yeah, I think that's somebody that deserves. I mean, he's pretty big influence in music.
Now, he was in what group before?
I don't know. Do you know?
I think he already might be in the Hall of Fame.
That group.
From the group he was in.
Yeah.
Wasn't he at the Commodores?
That sounds right, yeah.
So I'm going to say no. I'm saying that's good that he's made it for that. But you got to draw the line somewhere. I'm saying no. A Tribe Called Quest.
Yeah, I don't know enough about them. I mean, I've heard of them, but I really can't give an answer on that. So I'll say no.
I'm going to say I don't know, and I'm going to not answer the question.
There you go.
Kate Bush.
I have no clue who that is, to be honest with you.
I know who she is in terms of I recognize her name, but I'm going to say no. Yep. Devo.
No, I mean, they're known for the pot hats. I mean, what else are they known for besides that one hit?
That's a no. Whip It is it.
Yeah,
Whip and It. One-hit wonder. Mm-hmm. Judas Priest.
I mean, if you think about influential 80s sounds, right, they were probably that metal, hair metal, very influential in that. So I'll give it to them. Get them in.
I'm saying probably it's the closest thing to a rock band, I think, listed on this list. Yeah. MC5.
I have no clue.
Don't know what that is either.
No.
We're aging ourselves. New York Dolls.
You know, what is that, like punk rock of the CBGB days or something? That sounds like a band that would be there. I don't know.
I'm going to say yes in terms of the influential thing. It's kind of Lou Reed. It's Velvet Underground. Yeah. It's New York Dolls. So I'm saying yes for that regard. Rage Against the Machine.
You know, yeah, I think they were a big enough, they're political things I'm sure some people will not agree with, but I think they were a very... I won't say underrated, but they didn't get the attention that they might should have, but everybody knew who they were.
I'm saying yes, because they had kind of a bent. They had a message, mm-hmm. And, you know, as much for what they said as their music. Pat Benatar.
I think an influential woman. You know, in the sound of rock of the 80s and stuff, so give it to her.
I'm saying definitely yes. I thought she should have already been in the hall. I didn't know she wasn't. I saw it's something. I don't know if it was a Sunday morning show the other day or a couple months ago, and she has a lot of hits. Back
was
in
Chain
the,
Gang, was that Pat Benatar?
No, that's Pretenders.
Pretenders, okay.
Oh, my God.
Hey, you know.
All right, Ryan, this is right. I know you're going to kind of make a – this is where Ryan throws down, pounds the table.
Uh-huh.
Oh. For this artist, it's Fela Kuti.
Who the heck? That sounds like, I mean, sound like it'd be like a South African...
Don't know about him. So Google him up.
All right.
The Eurythmics.
No.
I'm going to say yes. I feel like it was influential as well in that day and age. What'd you get?
Yeah, Nigerian multi-instrumentalist. So I was close, right? I mean,
all right, and
I
last
the continent.
Last one, if you're still with the podcast, as we switch from Bulldogs Extra to Music Extra,
yeah,
it's Dionne Warwick.
I don't really know enough about her. I mean, you know, I'll say no.
I'm saying yes. She's been around for a long time. I believe she's very. She's done a lot of infomercials as well, and Psychic Friends Network is what she did. Which the Google just told me, but she used to have like a TV show, a variety show as well, and you know, been around the block. Wasn't she on Star Search? Maybe I don't know. Like a host?
I don't know. I just know that McMahon was the Star Search host, right?
Oh, maybe she wasn't. I don't know. All right. Ryan, you got anything else to say about sports?
No, man. Now I'm thinking about music. And why Dave Matthews Band was not nominated. They were 2 years ago.
Were they were eligible a couple years ago?
2 or 3 years ago, yeah. And they had the fan vote, you know, and killed it. I mean,
next tweet, Ryan will be putting out a hashtag DMB for the Hall.
Yeah, exactly.
And we'll see what happens. All right, hey, we'll come back. We'll talk more Georgia football next week. Maybe there'll be a new hire for a defensive assistant coach. Kirby, I asked him yesterday whether he'd be filling that Dan Lanning spot with another outside linebackers coach, and he didn't commit to that. So,
did he give you an evil eye when you asked your question?
It's on Zoom.
That wasn't recruiting based?
Oh, well, it was towards the back of the press conference. So, all right, everyone, have a great week. And maybe we'll talk about Georgia beating number one Auburn.
We will not talk about that. That's my guess. See ya.
Bye-bye.